Kedoshim. This week in Chutz Lartz we're reading Achrei Motan Kedoshim, and Kedoshim is of course a very famous, includes some banner bumper sticker lines, etc. Some other ones that are well known, but the whole presentation of Parsha Kedoshim is one that I think bears just some analysis. Both for the way that's presented and also the location that's presented. You have to go back and take a look at all of Sefer Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra is devoted to the Mishkan. In other words, the end of Shmot has the establishment of the Mishkan. And the Mishkan is accepted by God, the cloud comes down, and then Hashem summons Moshe, and that's the beginning of Vayikra. And Hashem then gives Moshe from the inside of the Mishkan, very much paralleling the experience up on top of Har Sinai when Hashem's inside of the cloud that looks like a fire. So here he's speaking to him from inside the Mishkan, which again looks like a fire because it's between the golden Kruvim, the golden Aron, and it continues to give him mitzvot. And the mitzvot that he gives him are all, the first section are all about Korbanot. Then we have an interjection which describes the dedication of the Mishkan, which may be going back to the end of Shemot. Unclear what that Yom HaShmini is. And so, Nadav Naviu. And then there's a whole other section of mitzvot that are all devoted to Tum'ah. To Tum'ah. And, okay. And the sequencing seems to be, because we read it in this week's parsha, the beginning of Achrei Mot, that here is the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the collective and compacted focal point of the community, which is the Shekhinah. And the Tum'ah are those things that coming into the Mishkan will defile it. In other words, somebody is a Tmei Mate and they walk in, they've defiled the Mishkan. Somebody is a Tmei Sheretz and they walk in, they've defiled the Mishkan. And as a result of that, that leads to everything, by the way, from Perek Yud Aleph through Perek Tet Vav is only about Tum'ah. And then you get to Perek Tet Zayin, which is Achrei Mot, the beginning of Achrei Mot, and it's essentially the response to that, which is Tum'ah happens, and therefore here is a procedure, a ritual, for the Kohen Gadol to do to cleanse the Mishkan from Tum'ah. The beginning of Achrei Mot sounds as if whenever Aharon wants to come into the Kodesh Kedoshim, he can come in, here's what he has to do. Par v'ayil, the nation has to provide Shnei Seirim, etc., etc. However, it becomes clear later on in the parasha that he's not coming in because he wants to, he's coming in because he needs to be machaper al hamikdash. Then, at the very end of the parasha, we hear that this is an annual ritual, and that is Yom HaKippurim, the day of Kaparat HaMishkan, in which he's going to cleanse the Mishkan. Okay, very nice. But if you think about it, so far, everything has been focused around the Mishkan, and it's not even about things emanating from the Mishkan, it's all inside the Mishkan, meaning, build the Mishkan, here are the korbanot you bring in the Mishkan, here's the Tum'ah that if you have contact with it and come into the Mishkan, you defile it. And here's how to cleanse the Mishkan. Very good. The tail end of Kaparat HaMikdash, which is the great overlooked piece in Achrei Mot, I'll explain that in a second, is Shchutei Chutz and Ha'alat Chutz, bringing Korbanot outside of the precincts. And that seems to be sort of the addendum, if you will, the epilogue to the whole thing of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the place where everything has to be brought, and the Mishkan is subject to Tum'ah, and the Mishkan needs Kapara, etc. And by the way, the Mishkan is also inviolate in that you cannot bring Korbanot outside, and here's the punishment. Okay. Why do I say it's the overlooked piece? Is because Yom HaKippurim, the Kriyat HaTorah in the morning is Achrei Mot. The Kriyat HaTorah in the afternoon is Achrei Mot. But the Kriyat HaTorah in the morning is the first third of Achrei Mot. The Kriyat HaTorah in the afternoon is the third third of Achrei Mot, which we'll get to in a second. And the middle part is skipped. There's actually a Shita of the Or Zeruah that when Yom HaKippurim falls on Shabbat, you read that, because you have to add an extra Aliyah. So you read the middle part also. Just go all the way through. We don't do that. But What's the last third of Achrimot? It seems a little bit curious, and it's also in this week's parasha, so it's appropriate to speak about, it's appropriate in any case, which is the Arayot. But the Arayot are presented there not as hallmarks of personal sanctity and abstention and restraint, but rather as an extension of the issue of Tum'ah. Because if you remember in the Parsha of the Arayot, it begins with, I brought you out of Eretz Yisrael, do not follow the vile ways of the Mitzrayim, do not follow the abominable ways of the Canaanim into whose land you're coming, you have to maintain the moral high road. And then here's a list of all the vile things that you're familiar with or you will encounter there, avoid them. And then it says, because the nations that did these vile things were expelled from the land, were vomited up from the land, don't do this so you won't get vomited up from the land. Which means it's again talking about individual power to defile the community. Now, let me roll back and explain that. If you think about the Mishkan and the Korbanot, everything that's commanded there is commanded on a communal scale. This is the communal area. This is the communal landscape of offerings, etc. The issue of Tumah is all directed to individuals, but there's a very good reason for that. Think about any group activity, that you engage in that is successful. It always demands everyone in the group to be on board. It's a group activity, and yet you think about it, any one individual can disrupt that. Think about, well, classically, it's sing-along. You have a sing-along, and you've got 1,000 people that are singing, it's great. If 998 of them are singing and 2 of them are standing quietly, that's okay. But if one of them starts warbling off tune, it can mess the whole thing up. And one person's cell phone going off can mess the whole thing up. I said, as a seasoned kumzitz person, with always some kid clowning around or something like that, and the whole thing falls apart. In the same way, we've got Kiddushah, which is a broad communal effort, and yet any individual can mess it up. So we've got this Mishkan, communal effort. And then one person, this Taman, walks in, the whole thing can get defiled. So we have to cleanse that. Okay. The Arayot are presented in the same vein. The Arayot are not presented in the vein of you're defiling your own personal sanctity, but rather you are defiling the communal sanctity by doing that, by violating that. And it could lead to the nation being thrown out of the land.
Wait, yeah. The Arayot are communal, not personal.
Well, the way that they're presented in the consequence, they're certainly personal. But the consequence of them seems to be, don't do this because this will cause you to be vomited out from the land. So it's very similar to the impact on the Mishkan. The difference is that it's radiated out, because when we talk about Tumah v'Tahara, there's nothing wrong with a person being Tameh and just staying Tameh for the rest of their lives if they want. But they can't. But you can't come into the Mishkan. So in other words, Tumah v'Tahara is something that impacts on the Mishkan. Now that demand radiates out and said there are things that you could do, you're not allowed to do, things that you could engage in outside of the Mishkan, which will also impact on the community. And that's where the sexual ethics come in. But again, it doesn't hit on personal sanctity, it hits on communal sanctity and how you can impact on that. Which then leads us to Parsha Kedoshim. And if we only talk about the first couple of Pesukim, that will also be a big accomplishment, because the first couple of Pesukim are weird. Let's go back to the single most popular Pasuk in all of Tanakh. What is the single most popular pasuk in all of Tanakh? Right, which is Vaydaber Adonai Moshe L'Emor. There's more of those than anything else, right?
You say popular or
popular? Popular. There's more. There's more frequent, right?
Right.
There's more of those than anything else, and not most with the most bumper stickers. But now, what's the most common follow-up to that introduction? Vaydaber Adonai Moshe L'Emor. Daber al Bnei Yisrael. So what's Moshe being told to do?
Talk to the people.
Talk to the people. Who's he talking to? Hashem says to Moshe, go talk to Bnei Israel. Who's he supposed to talk to?
All the people.
Everybody. Several million people. How's he going to do that? So truth is that almost assuredly that doesn't mean that. And how do I know it doesn't mean that? Because look at our parsha. Look on page 1. Daber al Adonai Moshe L'Emor, Daber el kol adat Bnei Israel. What does that mean?
Everyone.
Everyone. So kol adat Bnei Israel, right there on the top, Daber kol adat Bnei Israel implies that this particular presentation has a different demand that it has to have Kol HaDat B'nei Yisrael, as opposed to the usual Daber B'nei Yisrael, which is why many Rishonim understand Daber B'nei Yisrael means you're going to speak to the heads of the households, the heads of clans, whatever, and then they're going to transmit it further. Because on a pragmatic level, it's also very hard to picture. It's hard to picture how he would do this.
Right.
But there's only several places in all of Chumash where Moshe is to speak to Kol HaDat B'nei Yisrael. For instance, when they assemble at Har Sinai, or when he assembles them to talk about the building of the Mishkan, the beginning of Vayakel. So I can understand those things, because those things are huge public enterprises that they're going to engage in. But this one's strange, because he's told to call everybody together and take a look at it. V'amarta aleihem, kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani Adonai Eloheichem. What does that mean? Call everybody together and tell them, kedoshim to you, you should be holy, because I'm holy. So first of all, why call everybody together for this, more than for tefillin or tzitzit or Shabbat or something else? Second of all, what does that mean, kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani? What does that mean?
Is it ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeinu or ki kadosh kama ani Hashem Elokeinu?
Well, then what does ki kadosh mean? You're right. The phrasing is ki kadosh ani Adonai Eloheichem. But what does ki kadosh mean? Then?
Because ani Hashem Elokeinu is used in a million places.
Yeah, but just translate the phrase then. Just translate it. Kedoshim to you, ki kadosh. What does that mean?
That's a shir.
What?
That's a shir to explain. I mean, a lot of things.
No, I'm saying, how are you translating it if you're stopping there? See, I'm not stopping there. I'm saying, Kedoshim to you, ki kadosh, ani Adonai Eloheichem. You be holy because I'm holy. I get that.
Well,
I'm not sure how it would translate otherwise.
Maybe it's not I am holy. Maybe it means something else.
Well, then we could suggest an alternative, because failing an alternative, we're kind of stuck with that as translation, which is weird. The other thing is, Kedoshim to you. When Moshe calls everybody together, when we hear public speech, in what person are the mitzvot? Think about Aseret HaDibrot. It's not Zichru at Yom HaShabbat, it's Zachor at Yom HaShabbat. It's not Kibdu at Avicha, it's Kabed at Avicha v'Tzimcha, right? Because he's talking to the collective. What happens here? Kedoshim Tihiyu, which is a little strange. We expect it to be in the singular again. So something about this stand, something about this command, and something about the location of this command that really calls our attention, including the explanation for the command. Right? And then, just to peek a little bit further, right afterwards we're given the following. We're just going to look at the first few psukim here. Ish imo v'aviv tirao, v'shabbatotai tishmaru, ani Adonai Elohechem. There's that coda again. So every man must fear his father and mother. Keep my Shabbatot, which, if you think about it, is a very weird hybrid. And then, again, Ani Hashem Elokeichem.
Is that plural? Tirago and Tishmaro?
Uh-huh. Al tifnu al ha'alim ve'alohim ha'asecha lo tasu lachem, Ani Adonai Elokeichem. Now, attempts are made, going back to the famous Yerushalmi, to align the mitzvot to the beginning of Kedoshim with the Aseret HaDibrot. And it works here. You got Shabbat, you got parents, you got Avodah Zarah, the order's not the same. But okay, we can squeeze it in, right? But again, this siyomet, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Now, by the way, the things we're talking about, Kibbur Aveim, or Mora Aveim, Shabbat, and Avodah Zarah, are big things. And then the Torah comes with this minor halacha, V'chi tizbechu zera shlomim v'adunai yitzonchem tizbechu. I gotta tell you, when people are just leaning through the parsha, or reading through the parsha, Kedoshim to you. They get all ennobled. They get all excited. And then Ishimo Aviv Tirao, Vachapto Tai Tishmoru. Elohim HaSeh, no Avodah Zarah. Very good. And then they get to this and say, what the heck is this doing here? It's very odd. Especially because they know that looming in the background, waiting for them, is right around the corner, is Vahavta L'Recha Kamocha, and all these other bumper stickers. And here, what's this? So let's take a look at it. V'chitiz B'chum Zevach Shlamim. You want to bring a shlamim. Bring it to your favor. Right? Bring it to, it should be accepted properly. Eat it on the day you offer it and the next day. But I'm talking about whatever's left over the third day has to be burned up. Again, we're now getting into what we consider to be relatively mundane things. If it's eaten on the third day, it's a pigul and it's not accepted. And anybody who eats it is violated, gets karet. And then we're not done. And this seems to have nothing to do with anything. When you harvest your field, then don't cut the corner of the field and don't pick up the leket. So ololot and peret, the two gifts, unique gifts out of the vineyard. Leave them for the poor. Okay, so we've just gone on this weird tangent into the halachot of kodshim and of zoraim, and they don't seem to fit together with each other very well, and they don't seem to get fit into the landscape of the larger mitzvot that are here. And then we seem to say, oh, wait a second, we're supposed to be talking about big stuff. Let's go back to the big stuff. Lo tignovu, don't steal. Lo tichachashuv, lo tshaku ish bamito, don't deny a debt. Lo tishavu bishmila shakir, v'chlatat shem ilachad mi'adunai, don't take a false oath. You violate God's name. And it builds up until we get to v'hafta v'echa kamocha. So I want to ask just two questions. What do we do with the introduction? This call it up in Israel, Kiroshim to you. What does Kiroshim to you mean? Why is it posed that to everybody together and yet it posed in the plural, not in singular, like we had with other gatherings? And what's up with this pigul and leket being thrown in the middle here? So I'd like to, as we're all familiar that the Ramban and Kiroshim to you. Everybody knows the Ramban and Kiroshim to you. All right, we'll start with the Rambam, though. The Rambam regards Kiddushim to you as a mitzvah. But he says, the reason I will not count it as an independent mitzvah among the Taryag is because it's what the Rambam refers to as a mitzvah kolelet. So just a quick interjection. As we all know, the famous Rosh Hashanah Rav Simlai, there's 613 mitzvot, 248 mitzvot tasei, 365 mitzvot lo tasei, period, end of report. Doesn't give us a list. Which leads to the very famous literature that we call Minyan HaMitzvot. And starting in the 9th century all the way really into the 15th century, there are different scholars who are suggesting what should be included in the mitzvot. How do we reckon what's in the mitzvot? Is tefillin one mitzvah or two mitzvot? Is Kriyat Shema one or two? Is the menorah one or two in the morning and the evening? All the questions. Is living in Eretz Yisrael a mitzvah? Not a mitzvah? And therefore, you have to play with the count, because if you drop one out, then something else has to fit in to make it work. The Rambam, when he wrote Sefer Mitzvot in the 12th century, he wrote an introduction. The introduction to Sefer Mitzvot is written in Arabic. He wrote an introduction to Sefer Mitzvot, which is made up of 14 paragraphs. And the 14 paragraphs that present programmatically what he considers fit to go into the list. So first of all, the first thing is anything that's Drabbanan doesn't go on the list, because the language of the original Drasha is that Moshe was given 613 mitzvot Har Sinai. So therefore Drabbanan doesn't go on there. And he's taking direct aim at the Bahag, who included Nerot Shabbat and Bikur Cholim and other things that are Drabbanan. Okay. And he has 14 different paragraphs. Anything that's learned by one of the hermeneutic rules is not included. And Shoresh number 4, paragraph number 4 says that it's inappropriate to count a general mitzvah. What's a general mitzvah, an all-inclusive mitzvah? When the Torah says, keep all of my mitzvot, that's not a mitzvah. Right? In other words, any statement where Hashem says to us something which impacts on all the mitzvot isn't itself in a separate mitzvah. And the Rambam includes Kedoshim to you as an example. Right? The Ramban takes a similar tack, but the Ramban famously, in a beautiful paragraph, you have a chance this week to read it. In the first comment on the parsha, quotes Rashi's famous thing, the Kiroshim to you relates Prushim to you, and it's specifically related to the Arayot, and it's sort of the other side of what we left out in the Arayot, the personal impact on it. The Ramban says, but Kiroshim to you really means that beyond all of the prohibitions, Kadesh Atzmacha B'Mutar Lach, take that which is permitted and sanctify yourself. And he describes the other side of that, which is somebody who is a naval b'rshut haTorah, a scourge who is within the bounds of the law. Meaning, you can be a perfectly legitimate Jew, not violating any laws, and still be a terrible person. right? You technically didn't defraud anybody, and you technically didn't eat anything not kosher, but you eat like a pig, and you get around every possible legal loophole that you can, and, you know, we're familiar with it. He says, Kedoshim Tiyu tells you not to be like that. That's the Ramban. So some people look at Kedoshim Tiyu as being a separate mitzvah, which really impacts on your whole life. The Sforno took a different approach here. He said, Kedoshim Tiyu is really sort of an introduction to this whole list. Which is interesting, because you look at the list, have to see which part of this list really seems to fit that well. Right? So what I'd like to suggest is, and this is why the language here, calling everybody together and yet speaking in the plural, not in the singular as a group, is so vital. Because we were at Har Sinai, and what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to us? Atem Tiyuli, Mamlechet Kohanim, V'goy Kadosh. You're going to be a holy nation. And everything from that moment on is geared toward creating a holy nation. Think about Parshat Mishpatim. What's it about? It's about all the criminal and civil laws that create a just society and then a holy society. The next thing after Mishpatim is build a Mishkan, creating a holy society with God's presence in it. The next is Vayikra, with all of the Korbanot and then the Tumah that could interfere with that. And then even the Arayot, which interfere with that Kedushah. It's all about a collective. But let's go back to the very beginning of Bereshit, the first chapter. When God created man, what does it say? He created man how? In his image. It means man is supposed to be in the image of God. Individual man.
And what does it mean in the image? In what?
Good question. However we interpret it. Free will, conscience, accountability, creativity, you name it. Almost every possible interpretation is out there.
Including the physical form?
But no, that's something at least post Rambam nobody checks. But
I know. That's why I'm.
But however,
why is the, we,
however we will interpret.
We,
however
we we'll another word.
However we'll interpret it. However we'll interpret it, for lack of a better word, there is still that call for the individual person, individual Jew, to reach a level of sanctity and of being imatat yodei, imitating God, which Sefer Dvarim later develops a lot. But we haven't had it till now. So now watch how beautifully Parshat Kedoshim actually becomes the ribbon on top of the great gift of Sefer Vayikra. Because Vayikra, starting really in the middle of Shemot, is about building the holy society. And now God says, call everybody together and speak to them as in the plural, because now they need to look at themselves as individuals, not as part of a group. And as individuals, they need to aspire to great things. However, because an individual operates on his or her own spectrum, I know who I was when I woke up this morning. I know what I'd like to reach by the end of the day. It's not the same as you, not the same as you. We've all got our own spectrum we're working on. And tomorrow, God willing, we move it further. As a result of that, there's a generic statement, Kedoshim Tiyu, which allows everybody to be working on that in their own frame, in their own space where they need to move, at their own pace, and to their own goals that they need to move. But now there's a framework given for how to do that. So notice that there's this suffix, Kedoshim Tiyu, Ki Kadosh Ani Adonai Elohechem. It's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm going to remind you, way back when I created you, I said, I created you in my image. So now I'm telling you, as individuals, it's your job to aspire to Kedushah, because that's what I am. And so therefore, the plan that's being presented here is the broad plan, and then like the Ramban says, everybody has to find within their own pieces how to raise their own sensitivity and sanctity. But this is sort of the broad way, the broad plan of doing it. So let's think about how it starts. Ish imo v'aviv tirao. Now I want you to think about the picture. Moshe is talking to all of Klal Yisrael. How many generations are in front of him? I'll guess 4 or 5. Right? People living long, normal long lives. People having kids fairly young. There may be 4 or 5 generations. Certainly 3 generations in front of him. So what does Ish imo v'aviv tirao? What does Ish imo v'aviv tirao mean? Each man honor his mother and father. Who are you talking to? So you're talking to the middle generation. They're honoring their mother and father. They, in the meantime, are going to become the object of the fear of the next generation. So it's as if I'm speaking to all of you, and each one of you has to hear the part that's appropriate for you. Now, why is that balanced with that chapter Taiti Shmoru? So the famous Rashi, quoting the Midrash Halacha, it says that why are these two put together? Because even if your parents tell you, violate Shabbat, you don't listen, because all of you are obligated to honor me. And there's what that seems to be speaking to is also a mode of Kiddushah, and I'm borrowing this straight out of the Rambam, who got it straight from Aristotle, which is that Kiddushah is best achieved by maintaining the balance between the extremes. Now, the Metron Aris, the golden mean, the Shvil HaZahav, the Rambam talks about. So it is certainly vile and disgusting for a person to not show proper respect and fear of their parents. On the other hand, and we've seen this before, people who show such tremendous adoration and fear of their parents that it becomes the sum of their spiritual world. And they can't balance when their parents are, let's say, telling them to do something wrong or making irresponsible requests and demands of them. And I'm sure we all know people who have made huge decisions in their lives that were not in their best interest because the parents demanded of them. And they didn't have the ability to say, I'd like to, you know, I love you very much, but I'm not going to go to medical school or whatever it might be, right? And so the Torah is immediately giving us that balance. Ishe mi'olav tirao, but v'chav tutai tishmaru. Right? Don't let, and because, remember, the Torah's battle always against paganism, don't let it become a fetishism. Make sure that your honor for your parents is something that's emanating from Ani Hashem. The Avodah Zarah part I get. The problem we want to talk about, we're going to end with this, is the whole issue of Pigul. Now, what's Pigul? So Pigul, the way it's presented here, is eating a korban past its time. But that's not Pigul. We have another word for that. That's called notar. What's Pigul? Halachically, it is the following. A person brings a korban, and when they bring the korban, they say, I'm bringing this korban in order to eat it for another 3-4 days. Whereas it's limited to 2 days. And what you're intending to eat it past its time. So what does that have to do with this? Why is this here? So Shaddal has a marvelous explanation, without which I'd honestly be at sea here. I wouldn't get it. He says, what's a shlamim? Yeah. Shlamim is a korban you bring that you share with everybody, right? Why do you bring a shlamim? Typically you bring a shlamim because you've had some good fortune, you've had a successful year, you want to give thanks to God, you want to share it. So what happens? You got a shlamim, and you have to eat it today, and you have to eat it tomorrow, and that's it. You got a huge animal. You shechted it. You gave part to the kohanim, part goes to the mizbeach. You got a lot of meat. So what are you going to do?
Freeze it.
So why can't you? Why can't you? Because that's what pigul is.
Share.
Therefore, you have to share it. Who are you going to share it with?
The poor.
Exactly. And what are you going to do when the poor come? And all your people come and they're eating this meal, you're going to get up and explain why you're doing it. Think about a korban todah. It's fascinating. A korban todah could be a cow. And a korban todah comes with 40 loaves, 36 of which are eaten by you. 4 go to the Kohen. Imagine, and you've got one day to eat it, that day till that night. You're going to have a huge blowout party and invite all sorts of people. And what are you going to do when you get up at the party in between stuffing yourself? You're going to explain why it is. I was on a ship and we tossed at sea and suddenly we prayed and Hashem saved us. I want to give thanksgiving to Hashem. And everybody now hears Shevach LaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're feeding multitudes. So Shaddal suggests that the whole driving thing behind Pigul is tzedakah, to make sure that when you're bringing a korban, you're celebrating and share it with everybody. Because you're not allowed to freeze it, Kilu. You're not allowed to delay it. And that's the next piece, which is within the same paragraph, which is, when you cut your field, leave a corner for the poor. When you harvest and you drop stuff, leave it for the poor. All giving us the same message, which is, when God blesses you with good fortune, make sure to pay it forward. Make sure to share it with those who are less fortunate. Now we can start talking about Kedoshim to you. Because Kedoshim to you is not just about your spiritual life. It's not just about your life in the house with your parents and Shabbat and balancing that. It's not just about your theological reality. It's also about your interpersonal reality and how you deal with the poor. And you look further on in the parsha, you'll see that every step that happens continually through the first 19 psukim are all ranking up, moving you up the level of kedusha, To the point where you not only are not stealing, you're not denying a debt, you're not defrauding somebody, you're not keeping your bad feelings towards somebody inside of you, but you're sharing and saying, you really hurt me when you did that, let's clear it up. Till the final bell rings and it's v'haftarecha kamocha. It all leads up to there. What happens afterwards is another piece, or to quote Hillel, Yirach Perusha, the rest is commentary.
How does Shabbat and mother and father tie into that?
Oh, good. So again, at the very beginning of it, Kedoshim to you. So Kedoshim to you has to do with how you relate to your generations, right? In other words, even though it's Ki Kadosh, and you could say, I'm an independent person, it's an existentialist mode, and my relationship to the generations is irrelevant. No, it's very relevant. And yet, how do you balance it? You balance it with an awareness that you've got your own responsibility to God, and that as much as you're responsible to your parents, their demands which pull you away from that responsibility has to be pushed aside. There's much, much more to talk about here, but it's already, you know, the time.